highlights of 2007, just to start off with before I get into the longer term plan for Sasol. A great year, record results, operating profit up 49%, but an 18% increase in operating profits, which takes out the effects of the olefins and surfactants changes. That would be a better reflection of our true performance. Headline earnings, a more modest 10% because of some capital effects, which we will discuss. Significant returns to shareholders, both by way of a dividend of 9 Rand, 27% up, and significant quantity of shares already bought back. Good. Short-term results need to be seen within the context of a broader strategic framework. We believe that despite some shifts to the macroeconomic environments, which I'll come to, this has remains a resilient, a competitive strategy. You're all familiar with the key growth drivers that are basically based on our technology. I'm not going to go through them. They haven't changed in many years. Important to note, though, it's not just about GTL and CTL. It's about growing our chemicals. It's about developing our upstream opportunities as well. But probably more importantly for today's discussion is that this feeds into the strategic agenda comprising of these four building blocks here. And we're going to be talking about all four of those building blocks. This is our existing business, largely in South Africa, that is doing really well. This is the foundation of Sasol. It's sometimes overlooked. Its performance, I think, is somewhat overlooked because of the GTL and CTL in the bottom block. But it's doing really well. Benny and his team are going to be looking after the kit in the South African energy cluster. We're going to be growing that. The 20% growth at Secunda is an example of that growth that we refer to there. And of course, our other assets around the world are going to be nurtured and grown as well. The second two blocks have to do with sustainability. We'll be talking about those, and particularly about the empowerment component of this one. And then commercializing our technological lead is obviously a very important focus of Sasol and our growth rate program into the future. This is what makes us different. This is unique to Sasol. It makes us different from other oil and gas companies. The fact that we have a technology that nobody else has developed to the extent that we have and can convert huge reserves of coal and gas into much needed transportation fuels. So in a nutshell, our strategy is to take our competitive advantage, replicate what we've done so successfully in Secunda over so many years, use that to grow our liquid fuels business, our chemicals business, and our upstream business, and of course at the same time to nurture and grow our existing assets. I'll touch on later how our values play into this strategy as well. But of course, our strategy must fit into what's happening in the world around us. And there have been some big shifts. Oil-based prices remain high. They seem to be sustainably high, certainly as we foresee things. And this has some impacts. Obviously, the high oil price is great for our strategy. It's great for our business. But it seems there's more and more demand for oil, and this plot is to demonstrate that if it takes the per capita consumption of oil, and we see where it is for the OECD countries, the developed countries, and we see where it is for China and India, and these are going to be growing. They must grow. You see the signs of the growing. They're growing at an enormous rate. So their per capita consumption must go up. And if you just look at China and India's demand for fuel, I think we calculated something like 17 million barrels of oil extra per year per day that the world has to find. 40% of the world's transportation, of world's energy demand is for transportation fuels. And oil is the only significant contributor to transportation energy at this time. So there must be other alternatives that come into play. And those, of course, we believe coal and gas, natural gas, must play a significant role in supplying the world's energy needs. We cannot prevent those developing countries from using more energy. What we need to do, of course, is make sure that they use it in a responsible way, and I'll come to that in a moment. But this shows coal reserves, the legend, I'm afraid, is behind this animation. Coal is grey, red is gas, blue is oil. And we can see there why Leon, who's sitting there in the front, has so many frequent flyer miles, because he's going to all of those places that have enormous gas or coal reserves that are importing oil. And what does our technology do? It takes those reserves and converts it into very high quality transportation fuels. So you can understand this enormous interest that there is in us. Yes, it does take quite a while to get some of these big projects rolled out. That's no different from any other other player in the industry. Big projects take a little while, but the need is becoming more and more acute for us to play a role. And what this does is it demonstrates that not only is there a growing shortage of crude oil, but it's the crude oil is in the wrong places, if we can put it that way. If you look at where the oil is, it's in 9 countries, but those 9 countries represent only 5% of GDP, 5% of the world's population. If you coal, 80% of the world's coal is in 6 countries, but that represents 46% of GDP and 45% of the world's population. So you can understand why these countries that have the large reserves are so keen to convert their own reserves into energy that their economies so desperately need to grow. So hence the opportunity for us, and we believe this is a great opportunity, and it's a growing opportunity. But of course, moving on to the next slide, there are challenges. And important here that we differentiate between gas liquids and coal to liquids. Gas liquids is fine. It produces these great products, very environmentally friendly. We're obtaining premiums for them in Europe at the moment. The process of gas liquids is fine. It does not have any emissions. In fact, it is better than the crude refining route. And so we can give a tick as gas to liquid as far as that's concerned. Of course, we're improving that, and its impact on the environment continuously as well, but that's not the issue. The challenge is to do with coal to liquids. Coal to liquid emits a fair amount of CO2. No question about that. It's something we acknowledge. It's something we're working very hard in. I'm not going to grind through all of the stuff that we're doing, but suffice to say we've committed to a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions that we see up there. We've already done some stuff in Sasselburg by bringing in natural gas to that facility. We had a world first in registering the clean development mechanism for nitro. And we're working very hard in improving our energy efficiency. Some symbolic things like converting this building to natural gas, which is a better form of energy from an environmental perspective, to some serious money that we're putting into Secunda to cut down on our Eskom bill by generating our own electricity from waste gases. And then I'm sure we'll have a chat about carbon capture and storage, capturing and sequestrating safely the carbon that's produced in our processes, particularly in the countries like China and the United States, India, where we're planning to do these projects. So I think the bottom line is that we really don't have all the answers on this one. But we've acknowledged it, we're taking it seriously. And alongside other coal users, we need to find solutions. It's a balance between development and environmental impact. And that equation needs to be balanced by finding innovative technology solutions. And we're working very hard on that with our R&D effort, and within our SDI division, there's a whole team dedicated to looking for solutions here. Another continuous challenge is around safety. The intervention that we've had in the last couple of years has yielded good results. You see how it's declining, our recordable crash rates, which is a very positive thing. I must say with regret, though, we still have fatalities. We have 4 fatalities during the course of last financial year. That's 4 too many, and completely unacceptable, and we certainly won't rest. So we've eliminated all of these fatalities. Just to give you an indication, now you have to work as an individual for 137 years without any form of accident, minor even accident, to achieve an RCR of 0.3, which is our target. So very tough targets we set ourselves there. Another shift is this pressure on the cost and schedule of our large projects. This is a global challenge, as we pointed out last time. There's a major shortage of capacity in engineering construction business. But I think the bottom line of this is that while we do have some slippages, we're doing well. If you look at our 40 current projects in various stages of development, that's about 56 billion rand in value. We expect our slippages to be within this range. We'll be 17%-19% longer than our original estimates. That's very much in line with IPA benchmarks for projects being completed in 2007. If we look at the same basket, we expect our costs to be 15% higher than we originally estimated. My microphone seems to be fading every now and again. Can you hear me okay? Can you hear me? Okay. SIERRA, when it looks at upstream large projects of the same nature as ours, seen a growth of 60% in cost between 2004 and 2006. While this remains a challenge, we're getting our hands around it. We've taken some decisive action. If you look at 25%, some 400 extra people at Sasol Technology who build up our own in-house capability. We revised our contracting strategy. We worked in close collaboration with a couple of selected E&C contractors on how we can mitigate this challenge into the future. I personally feel a lot more comfortable that while it remains a challenge, we've taken the right steps. Coupled to that is the overall shortage of skills, not only in this country, but in our industry around the world. Here again, we've taken some decisive action. Look at a few of those. We've increased apprenticeships by 233%. We're putting 140 million rand extra into artisan training over and above our own needs. We're doing something for the country as well here. It's a countrywide problem. We have a whole new division to recruit, train, and experience people. A large number of people, I think 500 or so people that are in that division, particularly to offer support through our expansion plan. Some significant things we're doing, and here again, while the challenge remains, I believe we've got our hands around it, and this is not going to be the constraint we thought it once might have been to our growth plans. That was an issue of sustainability, so is transformation. We're making great strides. We feel good about the contribution that what we are doing on a broad range of fronts, what good that is doing to the economy, to the communities, to our people in this country. Look at some of the things we're doing. Our procurement spend has gone up 40% in a single year to 4.2 billion rand per annum. We continue to invest in skills development, as we've just mentioned, and through our corporate social investment program. We've finalized a couple of big deals, liquid fuels, first phase of mining, second phase of mining we'll announce later this year. So a lot has been done. But that's not all. The big one, of course, is the one we announced this morning. And this is the largest single broad-based ownership deal in this country to date. It's not a transfer of assets. This is transferring 10% of Sasol's shareholding at a limited level into the hands of black people, largely ordinary South African citizens. What differentiates this deal is that it has a particular focus on skills and capacity development. It will focus on women empowerment as part of that. But if we think about this, this is what this country needs. In fact, the whole of sub-Saharan Africa needs it. On the one hand, we have a massive shortage of skilled people. On the other hand, we have just as large, if not larger, unemployment problem. People are desperate for work. We need the skills. So it doesn't take rocket science to figure out what needs to be done. We're failing society generally, I think, between ourselves and governments around. We need to do more collectively about skill and capacity building for the good of all of us. So that's why we feel particularly good about the way we've structured this deal. And we have structured it by the way we're going to select partners, by the creation of a fund, the Sasol Foundation, which will be there specifically to promote skills and capacity building, probably with some focus on science and technology, It's not just for Sasol, of course we will benefit from it, but it's a much broader concept. It's going to be looking at this from a South Africa incorporated point of view. So we feel good about that, and we think this is the right way to structure a deal. Millions of ordinary South Africans are going to benefit. We have four categories. The first category is 40% of the deal is going to go into the hands of our employees. 30% is to back black publics, and those are the ordinary South Africans from KwaZulu-Natal to the Eastern Cape, wherever, that would not normally have participated in a deal like this. We're structuring it in a way that they can participate, and we're going to go to great lengths to ensure that they do in fact participate with this. So that 40 plus 30, another 15% will go into selected partners, and there again we will select partners that either have something to do with our value chain, suppliers, customers, union, investment companies, but also people that have something to offer in terms of skills and capacity development to fit in with the overall theme of this transaction. And the remaining 15%, which is a lot of money if you take 15% of 18 billion, which is the size of this deal at a 285 rand share price, 15% of that that goes into the Sasol Foundation is a significant amount of money that we're committing to making a difference to our communities. Christine will chat about it a little bit more later, but the deal will be at market value. I've been asked several times today, what discount do we offer the shares? There's no discount for the shares. The value that we bring is the facilitation to make sure the funding is provided for people to participate. We believe there's absolutely no doubt that this will be in our shareholders' long-term interests. Christine will take you through some of the financial implications. So this is a deal that's very much in line with market norms in terms of facilitation. And deals like this help the economy grow, no question about it. The more the economy grows and there's a thriving economy, the more demand there will be for our products. We much rather sell those products into this economy than export them to China, India and other parts of the world. So this deal, no doubt, is good for us. Also good for the country.